Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour, halfway home with you on a Wednesday hump day. It's Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. We went heavy NFL first half of the show. We'll go heavy college football here on the back nine of the show, starting off on the WadeFord.com hotline. Let's welcome in our good buddy Jeremy Johnson of Dogs HQ. Make sure you check him out. They're great stuff as always. Jeremy, we saw what we needed to see, 45-7 versus Marshall. What were your big takeaways from the game? Anything you could really glean despite it being a very inferior opponent?
Yeah, you definitely want to see what the quarterback was going to do. You know, Gunnar Stocking, this was his second start, third game, kind of being the main guy, you know, and, you know, for what he was asked to do, he checked pretty much every box. He was able to go out there and run the football, and, you know, he was able to deliver the football and, you know, in some key situations through two touchdowns. One, that big long one to Zachariah Branch was probably the headliner, and that was another one of my takeaways is that, you know, Georgia has a explosive offense, and they can do it multiple ways. You got Dwight Phillips, and you got Zachariah Branch with all that speed, and the defense looks like Georgia's defense. That was the other takeaway, and there's a lot of speed and youth and athleticism up and down that unit, and I think it's only going to get a little better as the season goes on.
What did you make of the stable of running backs? Kirby Smart after the game said, you know, you need to run the ball a little bit more consistently to his liking. And my joke all week has been, Jeremy, that, I mean, I guess he has to nitpick something when you win 45-7. But what did you make of the backs?
Yeah, you know, you started the game with Nate Frazier, and, you know, there were some things that he could have done better. You know, there was a couple of times he left a little meat on the ball. And honestly, just, you know, going up in there and kind of, there was a couple of times we kind of ran into the middle of the line where the blocking was going some another direction that he could have got maybe a couple more yards. So I think that'll come as the season goes. He's also playing with a new front, you know, that group, and then he had injuries up front as well. So that complicated things even more. So, you know, just George is kind of trying to find who's going to be the rotation. You know, we didn't see Roderick Robinson. We didn't see Josh McCray either. Two guys I think Georgia will have to count on at some point this year. So, you know, I think this week you'll even see, you know, a lot more of that. And we'll see who gets the hot hand and see who kind of takes that position and runs with it. I think Nate's kind of the guy right now. But, you know, Dwight Phillips had a good game. Chauncey Bowen did some good things as well. And I think they like all three of those guys. And they're young players, too. So they're only going to get better.
You mentioned the receiving core. Aside from one or two drops from Dylan Bell, mostly the guys were actually catching the football. How much of a sight for sore eyes was that?
Yeah, I think that was the confirmation that they needed. You know, just that group went through it last year, and it's probably little things. And I think Dominic Lovett kind of owned that on Pro Day. It was a lot of little things that happened that led to a lot of that stuff. But it's like as many drops as they had, at some point it became mental. It was like, oh my gosh, like let's make sure we don't drop this one. So I think this group has a fresh start. There's a lot of new faces in there. There's a lot of athleticism. There's a lot of really good football players in there. So, you know, I think they've taken a step forward just with the talent level and, you know, some of the guys that, you know, probably are paying attention to those details a little more. So I don't think drops are going to be an issue this year. And I think their receiving core actually may end up being one of the strengths of the team just with how much talent they have.
You also mentioned the offensive line, a couple of injuries there. What do you know? What's the latest?
Yeah, Juan Gaskins got a lower leg injury or ankle injury. You know, we don't really know when he'll be back. They were really vague about, you know, kind of what his condition will be. You know, we're going to have to kind of wait and see. You know, they hope to get him back. I'm using air quotes this week, but, you know, maybe you let him rest and, you know, try to see if they'll be ready for Tennessee. Ernest Green's another one his injury was not really known. He didn't really go down in game, but it was severe enough to where he didn't come back and play. You know, obviously he had a lead, but, you know, kind of interested to see if he plays and what he does in pregame and throughout the week to see if he's another one that kind of says, let's just get you ready for Knoxville in 2 weeks.
What did you make of the state of the defensive line and the rotation? A lot of guys that are going to be fighting for minutes and fighting for plays, but I don't know if they have the standout star like a Jordan Davis or a Jalen Carter.
Yeah, you know, I think Christian Miller's morphing into that guy. He did some really good things. I don't think he had to do a ton just because, you know, it was Marshall was really, hey, we're going to come out and run it. And you kind of saw what that was up front early. And I think you'll see kind of Christian Miller evolve as a, I mean, I think he's a really good pass rusher. And I think he hadn't had a chance to show that yet. So I think he's kind of the guy that I would circle. Jordan Hall had a pretty good game as well. He's another guy who was a highly recruited guy a couple of years ago. And, you know, he's kind of been injured. So he hadn't really had a lot of experience himself. So I think he's one that is another guy to kind of put a pin in and say, okay, this is somebody that we could see become a star. Obviously, Joseph Jonah Ajayi returning from injury last year. He's another guy that's a five-star. I mean, literally all these guys are five-stars. So any one of them, you know, if they put together a good couple of weeks, you know, they start to get in that discussion of, hey, is this a first-round pick in the future? You know, so I think you got so many guys. Elijah Griffin's one that we didn't even mention yet. So I think they're loaded. They're Georgia. They're definitely Georgia up front again this year.
Listen, we know what next week's going to be as we're talking to our buddy Jeremy Johnson. Make sure you check him out at Dogs HQ. But when we get to Tennessee, how involved do you think Delp and Lawson Lucky are going to be?
I think they're going to have to be very involved, especially when you're talking about getting in the red zone and then being helpful in blocking in the run game, because those two guys have done this before. They've been in that environment. They've played in these big games. And, you know, you're going to be Gunnar Stockton and you're going to look around your huddle and you're going to be like, okay, who can I count on? Well, that's those two guys. And, you know, they may not have a huge role these first two games, but, you know, when you get in that foxhole, those are the two guys that have been here. They've done that. And they both seem to have a connection with Gunnar Stockton. I think Oscar Delp is his roommate. So, you know, they're pretty close. And, you know, Lawson's been really good as far as catching passes the last 2 years. So those two have to have big games in the next couple weeks just because, you know, having a young quarterback and having a guy who is low on experience, you need those guys across the middle of the football field to count on.
How great was it to see K.J. Bolden make that special teams play?
Yeah, that's Georgia for you. Preseason All-American, freshman All-American, and he's out there playing special teams. I mean, I don't know that K.J. Bolden played special teams at Buford. I mean, he may have, actually, but I think it was a kick returner. But he never really had to do that part of it. But he's out there doing it for Georgia, and the fact that he's bought into that says a lot about how much he feels about this program and how much is required of players at Georgia. I mean, it wasn't just K.J. Bolden. Like, freshman Ethan Barbour was out there switching jerseys. I mean, he played literally every special teams in his first college football game. I mean, it's a big deal for Georgia to be able to play special teams. And I think having so much young talent and so many good athletes that it's a unit that can really help them and really be a net positive for them, you know, going into some of these games when you get late. And, I mean, say if that happens in the fourth quarter against a big opponent in a championship situation, that's a huge deal for, you know, to steal a possession. So I think, you know, it's a bit of a forecast of things to come and how important that role is for that football team.
How much do you think that loss by Alabama reshapes immediately the status of the SEC, or does it at all?
I don't think it really impacts. Honestly, I don't think it impacts the SEC at all. I think it makes Alabama a more dangerous opponent because now they're a wounded team. They're a team that now has to start to look at their season like, hey, we already got one loss, another one, and we're on the brink of destruction here. I mean, because you can't lose to Georgia and then look at the rest of your schedule and be like, hey, I mean, we can't lose again, or we're not going to the SEC championship game, or we're not going to the college football playoff, if that's what their expectation is this year, you know? So they've pushed themselves into a corner early, and the rest of the SEC has to deal with that version of Alabama, you know, being, you know, I think we're going to start seeing that a lot, especially by the time we get to week four when the SEC play kicks in. I mean, this thing ramps up really quickly, and I think Alabama was just the first domino of that happening, especially being a top 10 preseason team.
Before I let you go, we did get to see our old friend Carson Beck in prime time. What did you make of his performance at the U?
I mean, he looked like Carson Beck. I mean, he's a really good player. I think, you know, some of the interceptions last year kind of soured people on what he was as a player. But, I mean, there were stretches of last year where he played really, really well. I mean, that second half of the Alabama game, the dude threw for 300 yards. And, I mean, he's a really talented football player. I mean, there were a couple places where he could have, you know, maybe threw the ball a little behind, you know, here, but that he's learning a whole new offense, playing with a new group of guys. I expect that to kind of be cleaned up by midseason. So that offense looks like it could be dynamic, you know. I mean, he just seems to really, you know, fit what they're trying to do, is it culturally and, you know, just with that offense. So, you know, that was pretty. Miami's a real team now. I think their defense is really good, and I think having Carson there, you know, he's an experienced. He's one of the older quarterbacks in college football at this point. So, you know, any opponent they face, you know, they'll have a guy that can go toe to toe with anybody.
Well, real quick, you mentioned that conference, and you know, I don't know how many times or how long we'll get to do this for, but some love for the guys out on the flats. That was an impressive win.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been recruiting really well. My background has been recruiting for the last couple of years, and every couple of months I'm just like, man, I'll see a guy. And I'm like, man, that dude looks like a really good football player. No one's recruiting him. Georgia Tech has him offering already. Their scouting department has done a really great job of finding these guys that haven't hit the national buzz yet, and they really recruit them and they build a great relationship with them, and that's translating over to them having a really close-knit, gritty football team. And that's, I mean, physicality and running the football is how you win football games at the college level. So I think, you know, Brent Key has done a great job over there. I think he's done a great job setting the foundation. I think they, you know, it's not even just this year. I think this is just the beginning of what Georgia Tech football can be over the next 3 to 4 years, just with, you know, being a consistent contender in that ACC.
Jeremy, great stuff. Appreciate the time. We'll chat soon.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you.
All right. That is Jeremy Johnson. Make sure you check out his stuff at Dogs HQ. When we get back, let's keep the college football conversation going with a little national perspective. Our buddy Ian Valentino, A to Z Sports. All right. Everybody's calmed down about this Arch Manning thing. Is he going to be just fine, or do we have something to worry about here? We'll ask him all that and more next. It's Chris Thomas tonight talking college football with you on 92.9 The Game. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Let's continue the college football conversation, shall we, as we get the national perspective on the WadeFord.com hotline. Our buddy Ian Valentino. Check him out, A2Z Sports. All right, Ian, the dust is settled. We all know that Arch Manning got a really tough test in his first game at Ohio State. 90,000 screaming fans going up against perhaps the best defense in the country. So what was your take on what you saw? Are we all overreacting, or is there serious concern?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised in the sense of I thought Steve Sarkisian called one of the most conservative game plans possible, right? And there weren't a lot of gimmies. Usually Sarkisian's great at creating gimme throws and getting guys in rhythm. Like what he did for Quinn Ewers a lot of the time was cut down the field a little bit and make easy reads, easy tosses, let his guys create in space. That's going to be tough to do against any top defense, especially like Ohio State, against a defensive coordinator that you haven't seen before. But I didn't see a lot of play calls that gave Arch too many easy looks. And so a lot of the time, now he didn't convert on several of his opportunities, and you could tell he was nervous, maybe doesn't have like the natural arm strength to overcome when he sees the ball or sees a defender late or is just late getting the ball out. So there's some things there that I think over time that he could tighten up as far as mechanics and how quickly he processes, sure. But I would have liked to have seen the coaching staff put him in a little bit better position, especially as the game was going on in that third quarter. Texas was running the ball really well against Ohio State. You'd like to build off of that. And all of a sudden, Texas started calling, you know, quarterback sneak in the goal line, getting stopped at fourth down. Inside the five a couple of times. And I just thought it wasn't a well put together game plan out of a coach that generally does great. So it's a rough first start for the season for Arch, but I don't think it's some massive game that we need to walk away from saying he's got no shot. He's going to be a better quarterback in 4, 6, 10 weeks than he was this week. That's a team with a ton of new starters as well. So it just looked ugly, and it probably looked uglier than what we expected after an offseason with way too much hype.
On the flip side, is Ohio State clearly the best team in the country to you?
I wouldn't say clearly. I mean, they played really well. I thought that they won that game more comfortably than what the final score said. Defensively, that was incredible. Like, Matt Patricia, hats off. Like, that, to be able to transition like that, again, a bunch of new starters, their situation wasn't too different. But, you know, offensively, I thought Julian Sam played well, especially for his first start. Again, new starting offensive line. So there's a lot of moving pieces there. New offensive coordinator. I don't think Brian Hartline had a great game as his first game as an OC, unfortunately. But it was a really impressive win. But they also played a team that wasn't exactly, coming out of the gates very strong in Texas. I mentioned some of that. I think Penn State is still going to be that team I would look at that could go against Ohio State. I think LSU, if their defense plays like that, they've got the firepower to beat Ohio State too. So I don't know if they're clearly the best, but they're definitely one of the top three teams in the country.
You mentioned LSU. They knocked off Clemson. How slim of a margin do they now have?
Yeah, they have really put themselves in a good position moving forward. You know, are they the favorite in the SEC? I think absolutely. I think, you know, Georgia might have been a little, you know, they had a good first week too, but I didn't really buy the Georgia train as much. Entering the season, I thought LSU would lose this game, but then four out of their best five defenders in week one were transfers, and then the other one was a true freshman, a 6'4 cornerback. So if you're telling me that defense is going to look like that for the majority of the year, we have to rewrite what LSU is going to look like the rest of this season. I don't want to overreact to it because it was a 10-10 game in the fourth quarter, but I thought very highly of Clemson too. So LSU now gets a lot more breathing room. They still have to be very, very competitive and probably be a top three or four team in the SEC, but winning that game is a huge step in it. And now they'll get the benefit of the doubt when it comes down to the CFP race. If they slip up a couple of times, it's going to be really hard to leave LSU out unless if they lose like four games.
What did you make of what Florida State did? We'll get to the Alabama angle in a second, but is Florida State legit?
I would say tentatively, yes. I think that is probably one of the best 15 teams in the country. I think that's a fair ranking for them. I wasn't super high on Alabama. I thought their playmaking beyond Ryan Williams entering the season was a big concern. How do you replace Jalen Milroe? And they didn't. They were banking on timing and accuracy and these things being good in Ty Simpson's favor. And he might get better as the season goes, but he's a first-time starter. So that's a huge learning gap. For Florida State to have a team full of transfers to come in, play physically, to dictate the game to Alabama, and to have the playmaking, I think everything possible went right for that team. And that's pretty much impossible in this era. Like most, you saw with North Carolina, when you see a bunch of transfers on the field, it's usually a sign that you're not going to be super physical. You're not going to have the depth, but that's a redefining win. So I think that is a team that has a shot. They've got at least a shot. I don't know about the playoff, but they have a shot to be able to compete in the ACC. That will eventually give them a shot at the playoff. But for them, it's about continuing the momentum now, because it's easy to ride that big win and then you have a drop-off game in the next couple of weeks. But I think that there's enough there. Thomas Castellanos deserves a lot of credit. He called his shot all offseason, comes out with a great game. So they're going to be, you know, a bounce back candidate. Can they now go for 8, 9, 10 wins? Seemed unfathomable 2 months ago, but for what they showed, they checked a lot of boxes.
All right. So from the Alabama perspective, is this just a glitch in the matrix or is this a systemic problem for Kalen DeBoer?
Yeah, I'm pretty worried. I'm pretty worried that this is a systemic issue. You can't talk all off season about fixing the culture, fixing toughness, fixing focus, and you come out and that's the game that you put together. I think there's just a disconnect between what Alabama football really should be about and what Kalen DeBoer wants it to be about. Look at DeBoer's history. He's had a lot of great winning seasons and been a part of successful programs, but he hasn't really built programs. He's usually been in places only a couple of years, used other people's recruits, and then taken that to be able to go take another job before those guys really see it through. Now, he's recruited really well at Alabama, but that should be a team that wins in the trenches, doesn't make a ton of mistakes, doesn't beat themselves a whole lot, and it's really been the opposite. It looks like a Pac-12 or Big 12 team masquerading as Alabama. I just don't think that's going to cut it. There's certain foundational things they need, and this identity is not it. And things got to turn quickly. Like, they might have to go to the five-star freshman, Keelan Russell, at quarterback, sooner than later, because that offense desperately needs some playmaking.
Talking all things college football as we look back on week one, transition into week two with our good buddy Ian Valentino. Make sure you check him out at A2Z Sports. All right, can Notre Dame do it 2 years in a row, overcome a tough loss, and then make it to the finals?
Yeah, I think they're still in it. Yeah, that was a surprising loss, especially maybe with how things ended up looking. But I think so. I thought CJ Carr, you know, the stats weren't always the prettiest, but he had some good moments. It's tough. Week one is tough. Sometimes it just doesn't go your way. And nowadays, it's a little bit easier to bounce back. It's not like the Northern Illinois loss last year, where that was really had you scratching your head. This one was okay. They probably went up against a team that maybe we underrated just a little bit, and you saw that play out as it goes. But they're going to be favorites in pretty much every game here on out, if not every game. So I think they've got a pretty good chance to bounce back. I still think they're a pretty tough team. They got to get Jeremiah Love, obviously, rolling, but it's tough when defenses are looking at a freshman, you know, first-time starter quarterback, and they know who to stop in that backfield. So not a huge concern for them. It's a disappointing outcome, but it's like Texas, where it's like, we can still right this ship and still think that we're going to be a better team in, you know, 3 months from now.
I know they put up 50 in week one, but any shot South Florida want to know could give Florida a little bit of trouble this weekend?
I think so. I think so, because that's a fast, that's an athletic team. That's the beauty of these Floridian teams, right? UCF, we've seen it with them in the past, and they'll come out occasionally. I think Florida's big thing here is staying focused and not giving the ball up, giving extra turnovers. Byron Brown from USF is a fantastic quarterback and incredible athlete. He's going to put a lot of strain on that Florida defense. So if you're Florida, you need to come out of this saying, we just can't lose the turnover battle. We can't sit there and think that we're just going to roll into this one and steamroll them, because you're not. Are they a big threat to win? I wouldn't take the Bulls, but I do think that Florida is at least on the radar to say, you know, are they going to be caught looking ahead maybe to LSU? And if they are, they'll get caught with their pants down a little bit, because I do think that USF at least has the athletes to compete. The question is whether they can play cleanly enough against a top competition.
Michigan strolls into Norman. I don't think they can do it. Oklahoma's a 5.5-point favorite at home, but, I mean, Michigan did what they needed to do in week one. They have seemingly a high-prospect quarterback. What do you make of that one?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think I like Oklahoma in this one. We didn't see Jaden Ott, the star transfer running back, a whole lot last week, so we might see a little bit more of him in this matchup. It's a tough ask for Bryce Underwood and that Michigan offense. Like, yeah, he's a physical freak, but John Mateer, the quarterback for Oklahoma, he came over from Washington State. One of the most well-rounded quarterbacks in the country. He's a great rushing threat, extremely accurate, gets rid of the ball quickly, doesn't make mistakes. Like, Michigan's a good team. They're not the team from a couple of years ago that will kind of goad you into mistakes and has like an overwhelming amount of playmaking. They're a young team. That's a transition team. So I think it's too much to ask for a team that maybe next year I think would have a much better chance of winning in that high stakes, tough road environment. But, you know, the one chance that Michigan has is the quarterback. If Bryce Underwood breaks out and kind of shows his five-star feathers, they're going to have a chance. I'm with you, though. I think John Mateer is too veteran and he's too consistently good to lose this one.
Before I let you go, we are buzzing here, pun intended, about Georgia Tech, especially with the way the ACC performed in week one. It looks like it could be wide open. Do you believe that what Haynes King did against Colorado is repeatable? Because he was amazing, but I don't know if he could do that for 12 straight games.
Yeah, for sure. And that Colorado defense isn't great either. I do, though. I like this team. We talked about it over the offseason. I think that I'm probably higher on this team than, you know, maybe some of the national folks, where I think I buy into it. I think the trench talent is good. I think they're in a good place developmentally, where guys are hitting their prime. I think Haynes King is the right fit for them. Can he, you know, keep playing fast? It's a big thing for him. Can he get rid of the ball quickly and not take on too much pressure and force mistakes as the margins get a little bit tighter? And that's going to be a big, you know, thing for the whole team, because if he starts to snowball a little bit that direction, it'll probably be, you know, break to too much the other way, and then the defense is going to be put in bad positions. But I think they have the starting talent, and they have the upfront trench talent to at least give everybody issues. I don't think this is going to be the first time that we walk away from a week saying, ooh, Georgia Tech might be a little bit better than what we thought, and maybe we need to keep moving them up in our projections here on out. So I'm still buying them.
Ian, appreciate the time as always. We'll chat soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, that is Ian Valentino of A to Z Sports. Great stuff there. Breaking down all things college ball. How about QB1? On the radio station earlier today, Michael Penix Jr. joined Dukes and Bell live at Flowery Branch. We'll bring you that conversation to close out a busy 8 o'clock hour on Chris Thomas Tonight. How cool is it to have QB1 on the radio station ahead of week one in the NFL? Well, that's exactly what happened today. It is Chris Thomas Tonight Turtle with you until 10 o'clock on 92.9. The game right now, I want to bring you that conversation. QB1, Michael Penix Jr. stopped by with the boys today on Dukes and Bell, and they got to chatting about week one and the NFL season.
It's Dukes and Bell live at Flowery Branch, guys, inside the Ticketmaster Studios, getting ready to sit down with us. We talk about my quarterback, Michael Penix Jr. And, Mike, man, it's good to see you.
Good to see y'all.
Man, look. I know you're ready. Like my heartbeat is all – I'm not even going to play on Sunday. I'm just going to be in the game, like, cheering. Mm-hmm. My heartbeat is going 1,000 miles per hour. How do you feel, man, first and foremost? Appreciate the time today as we get ready for the Bucs on Sunday, season opener. That's question one, man. How do you feel? All the camp stuff's behind us.
Yeah.
All the squabs. I said it. All the squabs behind us. All that stuff. How do you feel right now?
Man, excited, you know, obviously, excited, you know, for the opportunity, you know, I'm blessed for the opportunity as well, you know, to be able to, you know, be here, be going into my second year, you know, as a starter, you know, it's definitely a dream come true and obviously an opportunity that I want to take advantage of. So.
How much did you get out of camp? Because we talked about with our listeners, man, we want to see you. Everyone wants to see you out there. But obviously, Coach has you doing more 11-on-11s. We saw the Tennessee scrimmages. You felt you got everything you needed from this camp.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely, I feel like the biggest thing for me, you know, is definitely was from last year was just the reps with the guys, the reps with the ones. You know, as far as, you know, the only difference about me not playing in a preseason game is the physical aspect of it. You know, I won't take any hits, but, I mean, I've been playing football since I was 5. I've taken a lot of hits in my days, and, you know, that's part of the game. You know, that's what come with it. You know, but for me, it's as long as I'm out there being sharp, you know, being smart with the ball and, you know, being fast with my reads, you know, I feel like I'm in a good spot.
Michael Penix joining us here on Dukes and Bell, guys, as we get ready for the Bucs on Sunday. It's week one in the NFL at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Can you expound on these Matt Ryan chats, man? I mean, right. You said he helped you in different ways, I guess. And we're talking about preparation, taking care of your body, the off season. What exactly are we talking about?
Yeah, all of the above, you know, just showing me how to be a pro. You know, obviously, last year was my first season, you know, just trying to figure things out. You know, obviously, last year was a long year as well. You know, as a rookie, you know, you go from, you know, me, I played in the national championship game to, you know, you got all this pre-draft stuff, you know, so it was definitely a long year. But, you know, he kind of helped me, you know, just shape, you know, my off-season schedule. That was the biggest thing, the off-season schedule and how to go about that and, you know, our game week schedule as well, you know, how I'm going to prepare and, you know, how can I be the best version of myself come game day. So.
And the toughness of Michael Penix Jr., we talked about it with Coach Raheem Morris. We spent, like, weeks talking about you and that scrum against the Titans. And, Carl, he's swinging on cuz. Yeah, man. But I know that, you know, for you it's no big deal, but it was just something you don't normally see. And, it's, you know, we talked to Caden Ellis. We talked to the defensive guys. That's my quarterback. Yeah. I mean, was it not like it was intentional, but it just you had no second thoughts. I mean, you're just right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
What second thought? Would you not do that again?
I wouldn't. So, for me, I never try to start anything. You know, right. my pops, he always taught me don't start it but finish it, you know. But, you know, for me, it was we made a big-time play. They were making plays throughout practice, and they were, you know, saying what they had to say. So, whenever we made a play, I said what I had to say, and they didn't like it, you know. But
what'd you say? Get your ass back in the huddle. what did you say to these dudes, man?
I don't remember, to be honest. I really don't ever really get to that point.
Sure,
you know, when
sure.
When I'm talking,
it's just
right,
there.
You know, it just happened. And I
well,
don't know.
Michael, we'll say this because we rant and raved about it for a few days. One, because it was fun. I mean, honest, obviously, and nobody got hurt. Real talk.
Right.
Secondly, though, to Mike's point, you are a quarterback. We're going, Mike, what is Michael doing out there? Like, we were freaking out because we're like, don't touch him. Don't. And that was like our fear, but you didn't think twice about it. You were like, whatever you want to do, let's do it. Yeah. And then your teammates, I mean, to Mike's point again, defensive guys were on the other field. And the funny thing is James Pierce was starting a lot of stuff in camp. He was like, I wasn't even over there.
Yeah.
You know, so that was what's crazy about that whole ordeal. But it showed, I think, our fan base sort of what you're made of in another way, right? We know we can play football, but that's a whole nother element. Does our team have that? Do we have that it factor?
Yeah, we do. We do all across the board. You know, it shows each and every day. You know, obviously, it don't always show in fights, you know.
Right, right.
But just the way we compete, you know, guys battling, guys talking, you know, trash back and forth to each other, you know, bringing the best out of each other each and every day. So our team got it. You'll see.
It's my quarterback, your quarterback, Michael Penix Jr., guys, number 9 inside the Ticketmaster Studios here at the Branch. Every day at practice, we saw it's like 9 to 5, you and Drake London. I mean, just like boom, boom, boom. Seamless. Can you get things picked up with – I know Darnell's a little bit behind the curve with the injuries, but you also made an effort to get Pitts involved. Mm-hmm. What's Pitts and you going to look like this year?
Yeah, man, great. You know, he definitely had a big-time camp this year. And he's been working extremely hard, you know, and I feel like for him, he's a guy that loves to learn. You know, anytime we get a rep, maybe we don't connect on a rep, you know, he's asking how can he do the rep better. Sometimes just like, I made a bad throw. Like, don't worry about it. You do what you did, you know. But, you know, just our relationship off the field as well is definitely going to help us on the field as far as, you know, the things that we can do.
What about Darnell, man? I mean, I feel like he brings a different element to our team when healthy.
Right.
And, you know, Coach said he's day-to-day. We just talked to Ra about it. We hope he's available for Sunday. But from your perspective, playing quarterback, what do you see when he's out there and what he brings?
Yeah, definitely separation. You know, I feel like he's a guy that knows how to get open. And he understands the game of football. He knows when he's front side read, back side read, you know, when he needs to get open and stuff like that, you know. So he brings a lot, you know, not just physical aspects, but the mental part of the game as well. So he's definitely somebody on this offense that is definitely a key factor. So.
And Casey Washington, we saw him, he made the camp an effort. I mean, obviously, you and him had nice connections too.
Yeah, he's been great. Yeah, he's been consistent. That's one thing about Casey. You know what you're going to get out of him. Every day you're going to get a big smile and a guy that's going to run all day. And, you know, and he competes at a high level, and he definitely has really good hands as well. So he's definitely going to make big-time plays for us.
Michael, I know you've been asked this. Michael Penix joining us here on the show, guys, as we get ready for Tampa on Sunday, about Elijah Wilkinson. It's like you're probably tired of talking about it. I don't know. Everybody's wondering the trust factor, the concern there. Obviously, Caleb McGarry is a really good player that we lost, but we now know he's out for the season. Mm-hmm. Your concerns there? Any? How do you feel about where the O-line is and going into week one?
Yeah, I don't have any concerns about it. You know, like you said, you know, losing Caleb, that was tough, you know, for the whole team. But at the same time, you know, Elijah, he's been doing a great job. You know, he's been consistent all throughout camp. And even going back into last year, you know, he's been consistent. He knows the offense, and, you know, he's a good player. So we're definitely ready to see what he can do. And we know what he can do. We know what he will do. And we can't wait to see it. So for the people that's concerned about it, don't be. You know,
right
be good.
Before we cut you loose, last year you get to start the last three games of the season. I said that the test in Washington, that, you know, that big atmosphere on Sunday Night Football. How much more is Zach Robinson throwing at you now? Or how much more has the game plan evolved in this summer?
I really don't know how to answer that. The playbook has always been open. You know, mm-hmm. the same stuff that Kirk was doing last year, he has up for me. You know, but I guess we'll see.
Okay.
I guess we'll see.
No new wrinkles?
I mean, it's always new wrinkles.
Okay.
You know, that's across the board, everybody. You know, you're always trying to find ways to get better each and every day. So it'll be new wrinkles, but, you know, I feel like our identity is what it is. So.
What about your thoughts on the Bucs? Look, I'm not asking you to give the game plan, but you're watching these guys. You've watched probably tons of film leading into this week. What are your concerns, if any, about facing this Bucs defense?
They're a good team. You know, they got a good coach as well. You know, coaching that defense side of the ball up, and they got really good players on that side of the ball. So it's definitely going to be a challenge for us. But we're excited and we're ready for it, and we're going to go out there and do what we have to do come game day. So I mean, it's NFL football. Each and every week is going to be tough. So we just got to go out there and do our job.
Michael Penix, you are the perfect guy to ask. I have to ask this because over the weekend he's catching a lot of heat. You played for Kalen DeBoer. Mm-hmm. Alabama loses to Florida State. I have to ask.
Well, has he got more eligibility?
No. He doesn't. He doesn't anymore. But I got to ask, just these tough times, man, and you played for him and you right. know him really well. Alabama fans are reeling right now about, you know, oh, my God, we lost to an unranked team, blah, blah, blah. Can you talk about the makeup of Kalen DeBoer and, like, how he will respond in these kind of situations?
Yeah, he's an even-keeled guy and got tough skin, you know. So I know this is not going to rattle him or that coaching staff in any way, shape, or form. You know, obviously that's something, a win that they wanted to have. You know, they want to win all of them, just like everybody. But at the end of the day, you know, things don't always go your way. And Florida State was the better team that week, but they still got a chance to win out. You know, it's still another week, you know. So I know Coach, he's not over there, you know, soaking in his feelings about that loss. You know, I know he's ready to coach those boys up to be ready this week. So.
Yeah, and you lived that with him. I mean, you like I said, you guys had great wins and certainly some tough losses along the way. Yeah. Hey, man, we wish you nothing but the best.
Yes, sir.
Brother, let's make this happen. Let's go get him.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
The great Michael Penix Jr., there, QB1, I am excited. Hey, just a reminder, each Wednesday night, that's tonight, join Day-Day Lewis for Prep Sports Nation, a comprehensive look at the teams and athletes making news in high school sports across the state. It's brought to you by Ingles, low prices, love the savings. That's Prep Sports Nation, each and every Wednesday night, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. When we get back, what about the HC, the Atlanta Falcons? He spoke to the media today. We'll let you hear what Raheem Morris had to say about the state of Darnell Mooney, the right tackle position, the two rookies that have been named starters, and a whole lot more. You don't want to go anywhere. A busy 9 o'clock hour. Get started with Raheem Morris. Coming up next, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock.